You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Lots to talk about. As always, but especially this afternoon, because once again, put some things out there last night. Facebook explodes. So, Kellyanne Conway with a Chris Wallace interview on Sunday morning show yesterday with some interesting things to say that I think are somewhat chilling. I know there are those who are saying, well, you know, this is just whatever. She can say this, she can think that. Some dismissing it entirely. But I think we have to pay attention to the, as what I've said all the time, when you hear speak, there's context. There's always context. There's always subtext, right? There's always subtext. And then at times you can go even deeper and you can see more things happening, especially when you see someone speak and you see their body language and you know what it's all about. There's always the text, I guess I should say, the text, the context, and the subtext. There's always those three. So we'll look at that. We'll pick it apart a little bit more. Also, this disturbing story, as we've learned more now of what happened in Quebec City, we'll get into that with this mosque shooting and why this is particularly disturbing, as is anything of this nature. But this particular one, where it was, why, and how, very unfortunate. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Our Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith. Sometimes I wish that I could get all of the voices that I hear on Facebook on the show at one time, and we could just all kind of have a free-for-all yell fest. Just a shout down. Just shout down everybody. Just shout it down. Come on. Who can yell the loudest now? Because you're going to win. It's kind of what it seems like sometimes in these Facebook discussions. But hey, you know what I love? This is what I love about this day and age. Like never before. Never before have we been able to have these kind of conversations. I think it's wonderful. I know it gets emotional. I get emotional. Sometimes I'll say things that I know probably were not the most charitable, but I have such a passion for truth and justice. And I know that others do as well. But it's great to have these kind of conversations, because when could you have done it? When can you have done it? Ever before? Longhand letter writing? What is that going to do? It's going to go a few days back and forth before you have this type of exchange. Even in the public forum, if you got together for an hour, so what? But these conversations go on for days, sometimes weeks, and we dig in and we dig in and we dig in. That's good. That's good. We need to have more of that. There's absolutely nothing wrong. So when it gets heated and when it gets emotional, when it gets personal, that's okay. I don't have a problem, because we're exploring issues and we're digging into that. And that's where this Proverbs 27:17 comes into play, right? Where iron sharpens iron. It's like the stones tumbling to polish. Something beautiful about it. So what I posted in a couple of different places, one was the Salon.com. You can say what you want about Salon. Oh, they're left-leaning. They're fake news. Whatever. But it was a Fox News interview with Kellyanne Conway with Chris Wallace. That's who we were watching. And Slate, I just happened to find it there, and they were making comments about it. But they didn't even mention the comment that I was most concerned about, which was essentially Conway saying, the question is, why are these journalists, and it was kind of a tirade of criticism on the Trump campaign trail and the presidency so far and whatever. She essentially said, we're 3 months in. It's been 3 months since the election. Why have these people not been let go? Essentially is what she was saying. So that's a little chilling. I think we got to it at the very least. I don't care what your politics are. I really don't. When someone from a presidential administration essentially says that she wonders why these media professionals have not lost their jobs, that's a chilling position. That's a chilling proposition to hear. Because now we're talking about freedom of the press, which is certainly a huge hinge point in the First Amendment. Freedom of religion, which is a huge hinge point in the First Amendment. There's a lot of afforded freedoms that come in that First Amendment, the first of the Bill of Rights that says these are paramount of protection. So I've said it long time, and I know, well, let's put it this way. I hope I just am talking to talk. I hope there's no real fear of this. But there's been a lot of concern, as you know, there's been a lot of concern over constitutional protection, generally hinged around the Second Amendment. Because there are those who are confident, they were certain. I mean, I heard it predicted 8 years ago. Oh, well, this guy is such a radical liberal that he's going to come in and we're not going to have guns by the time he's out of the presidency. That should have happened in his first 4 years. But it didn't. So honestly, as crazy as it sounds, I'm hanging some hope on the fact that all of the predictions about the Obama administration did not come true, to hope that the same thing doesn't happen here. I don't know. I don't know if there have been those who predicted a demise of the First Amendment. But if you do begin to basically say government can control media, well, now we're just like any other communist or socialist country across the world that has these policies in place with dictatorial regimes that control everything. Because that's what that protection allows. First Amendment says you say what you want. You say whatever perspective you happen to have. You can do that. You've got freedom of the press, freedom of speech. You can do that. It's up to the public to discern. It always has been. It always has been. And it's what I've said from the beginning of these conversations in the media. Media has always had a bias. There's never a time when it has it. The town crier, where it all started, right? Where the guy went out and just told the news what was happening in the town on the street corner. He had a political leaning. We all do. We all do. No one is apolitical. No one is completely neutral. It's just not going to happen. I'm an independent because I can't subscribe completely to either agenda, but I'm undoubtedly politically leaning. You can bet that. And I tell people that. I tell anyone that. I tell everyone that. When you listen, you're going to hear a particular slant. You're going to hear my slant, right? When you see what I post on Facebook, you're going to see my slant. I think that's becoming more and more and more apparent. But I assure you this, it is not a party line approach. It is not coming directly, strictly from the left or the right. It's not a middle of the road. I'm trying to balance, so therefore I got to take a little bit of this and a little bit of that. No, it's because there's passionate things. There are things I'm passionate about in both of these camps. And you're going to get that. You're going to get that from me. So never, ever, ever have you had a bias-free media. It just has not been the case. Now, what we're seeing now in ways we've never seen because of the internet are incredibly biased, right? Now the extremes have gotten even more extreme. But that doesn't mean it's all fake. Fake news is literally made up. Opinion is not fake. Opinion is very real. You can have an opinion about anything that has happened, and it's real. It does not negate the fact that it's happened. And your opinion might be even more informed than someone else because you may have studied the issue, you may have had a personal experience, but it's still an opinion. It doesn't make it fake, though. What makes it fake is if something is completely fabricated, like this story about the pizzeria that was supposedly doing child porn, the guy goes in there with his assault rifle. That story that was fabricated by a right-leaning news, quote-unquote, right-leaning source, let's put it that way, that put this story together, is the only one that I know of that has caused any challenge of any sort, and it came from a political opponent of Hillary Clinton trying to smear campaign her. That's what that was for. That's fake news. That's the only account. Now, to say that, well, what about this dossier that we didn't know and just kind of came and went, right? Where's that one? Supposedly from Russia. That happened. It happened. That was there. Whether the stuff in it was fake or not, we don't know. But that happened. So to report on that is not saying you're making something up or creating something. Nor is it making something up when I do what I did in this and I listen to Kellyanne Conway and I hear two things that I mentioned. One is, I get what she was saying, but she said disposed of in reference to immigrants. And I thought, well, what a bizarre choice of words. There's 5,000 other words you could have put in there. You chose that, disposed of. A little bit bizarre. Freudian or Orwellian, perhaps, if you will. But the thing that got me the most is when she starts talking about how these media professionals should have already been let go. Because that's a dangerous proposition for a government official to start talking about how other individuals need to be, other organizations need to be run. Now, different than the acting attorney general getting fired by Trump because of her response to the refugee ban, totally different. That is a Obama appointee, and he can do whatever he wants. That is, but there are always administration changes, top to bottom. Jobs come, they go every 4 years. That is, or eight, depending on how long somebody sticks around. That happens. Not even remotely in the same ballpark as somebody saying, yeah, and I don't know why these media professionals, talking about the news being fake, talking about all they do is report lies, and I don't know why they still have their jobs. And then, thank goodness Chris Wallace was willing to say, Kellyanne, I hope you know that that's offensive. That's offensive to me and my profession, something I've devoted my entire life and career to say that there's no integrity in what we do. But that's what keeps happening. There's this undermining. There's this, let's doubt. Let's just keep creeping in the doubt to the point that now there are those. There are those who are convinced that all mainstream media is fake. It's all fake. Can't be trusted. And then where do they go? They go to the extreme news sites that supposedly are presenting the truth that really are fake news, right? Oh, well, we can't trust that CNN, but man, the alt-right prepper news over here is saying that Hillary Clinton's got a child porn ring, right? I mean, is this not a little bit disturbing? Should we not be a little bit concerned? That's what I'm talking about. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. I was talking earlier about Facebook and the the beautiful exchange of ideas that it can be and the way we can get into these conversations. And so I decided to post this earlier today. I subscribed to Father Richard Rohr's daily reflections, and in there he quotes Pope John XXIII, of course, Pope John XXIII, the Pope who ushered in the Second Vatican Council. And if you read any of his work, he's very Pope Francis-like, very accessible, that just kind of, you hear that the wit in him. And it was said, I, of course, before my time, but to say he was one of the most genuinely funny guys ever. Just had an amazing sense of humor, just a lot of fun, and I could see that. But then there's this quote, "See everything, overlook a great deal, correct a little," which is hard for me, right? I mean, there are times I think that I can kind of see and overlook. It's probably not the best place to be this, but I'm that kind of parent. My wife is not. I'm that kind of parent. I'm like, yeah. Are they bleeding? Okay. No, they're okay. Yeah, they're screaming, writhing in agony because they're beating each other to a pulp, but no blood drawn, no major swelling. I think we're okay. So I understand how that can be. I get it. But it seems like to me there are things that have to be addressed from a standpoint of justice. We have to look at the justice of an issue and say, is this just? Is it just? Is it merciful, right? Those are the justice and mercy, right? Those are the two things that we should be hinged upon with everything we do, which, of course, human dignity is the foundation of that. Because you can be too merciful, really, right? You can be. You can be too merciful to the point that there's something undignified about an allowance, this enabling. Right? When you're just an enabler, when you've enabled someone to the point that it seems to be merciful, but you actually are contributing to their challenge or to your own, right? You kind of tell yourself the lies. That can happen. And then, of course, justice, when it's retributive, is that the word? I said retributive. When it's retribution or extremely punitive, now we've got a problem. We got a problem because now the human dignity we've stepped over that line. And this is the beautiful thing, beautiful, beautiful thing about Catholicism. And I know not everybody gets it. And it's why I remain Catholic. It's why I converted and remain. It's because I think, and I may be wrong if you want to show me other evidence of this, but I think we have a monopoly on virtue. I think because of our understanding of virtue being both cardinal and theological, we have this understanding that we have the four cardinal virtues, the three theological virtues, and everything passes through in and around these seven hinge points that could truly make all the difference in the world. Truly, I say that with all honesty, could truly make all the difference in the world if we began to see that is the place to arrive. We arrive at virtue. We may not start at virtue. Granted, we may not. We may start very far away. But arriving at virtue says, now there's something called balance, right? Because what could be virtuous, once it's extreme, is now vicious. Justice. Virtuous. Unless it's extreme. Mercy, virtuous, unless it's extreme. We can go off the deep end. We can pull ourselves out of balance. So I've seen this over the course of my time as being Catholic. There are those who are so intent on the militant nature of their faith, right? That this is what it's about. They're going to be this culture warrior. They're going to go out there. They're going to fight the fight. They're going to slam things, they're going to create all of this consternation because of it's about the judgment of their faith. And with that, it could be virtuous, right? admonishment, exhortation. St. Paul talks about this. We have to do this. There has to be a point at which we are willing to step in and go, wait a minute, look at this. But if it becomes vicious, because now we've taken it to an extreme, we get a real problem. So when I read this Pope St. John the 23rd quote, right? This guy's a saint. When I read the quote, I have to say, it has to be that. It has to be that. It has to be that balance point that he's talking about, that we're going to see everything. We're going to judge less and correct a little. Is that what I said? I got to go back and read it. See everything, overlook a great deal, correct a little. And I think what this is saying is that that's where we kind of, where we can find the personal virtue in ourselves, because if we go too far, we're out of balance, we're certainly not virtuous anymore, and we haven't found that prudential nature of decision making, which really has to ask, is this prudent? Is it prudent to go to this extreme? Or is it more prudent to stay right here, right? That's, or do we need to kind of, where's the prudence to pull this all into the center and to truly find that position? So it's interesting, it's challenging, it's difficult when we look at real virtue and we're trying to really discern that and decide how is it that we can arrive there. But I think it takes grace. Of course it takes grace, but it also takes an awareness. Now, no one is 100% self-aware. I don't care how aware you think you are. You can never see the back of your head. Or you can never actually see your face other than a reflection, right? You never see our, there's many parts of our body that we can kind of only assume. We don't even know what we really look like. We don't even know that. We certainly don't know what we look like to others. And even if we take a photograph and do the flip around, right, where you can reverse the image and you kind of see what you look like to other people. Or I'm sorry, you see what you look like in the mirror. Excuse me. Yes. When we flip that around, that's, I knew when I said that didn't make any sense. Even when we do that, which I know this from my wife doing various work and having headshots done, that's a trick that they do. They'll flip the headshot around so women see what they look like in the mirror as opposed to what they look like to everyone else. I think that's what I was trying to say. Even when we flip things around, we still never really see ourselves. We do not see ourselves. But if we work at this awareness to say, am I going too far? Have I not gone far enough? And to challenge yourself in that, always cultivating that. Am I where I need to be? Have I gone too far? Am I off boundary here? Am I off base there? Is this prudent? Which that prudential judgment is truly, I believe it's, I mean, I know there are hinges, there are cardinal virtues in the four, but I think that prudence is the mother of all the other virtues, because this is where you weigh it all. You say, is it prudent to exercise that temperance, right? You could look at that. Is it prudent to have this justice issue be what it is? That's where you kind of got to look at it. And then you look at faith, hope, and love. You really can't go out of balance in those. You really can't, because they are the theological virtues that you can't love too much. You can't have too much faith. You can't have too much hope. They're in a different category because of that. And they're generally not going to be these issues of, you know, should I really hope about that? Right? We don't generally wrestle on hope. We don't generally wrestle. We might wrestle on faith. We might kind of go, we might have these questions. But go all in. You can go all in. Go all in on all those. Faith, hope, and love, absolutely. Ratchet that up. Crank it up. Take it to the highest possible extent of expression, and you'll be fine. You can do that. You can't do too much of that. But then these hinge points of the virtues must be maintained. Maintained. You've got to look at them and ask, am I going too far? You got to do that all the time. Or not far enough. Too far, not far enough, right? That's where we find the balance. That's where we find this beautiful expression of what real faith can look like. Faith can function in that. And not only can faith can function and you can have real credibility. Because now it certainly appears as though there's a consistency, there's a thread to what you're expressing, and there's something beautiful about that. So see it all, overlook, and correct very little. I think that's words of wisdom, no doubt. But wow, it's hard to do. Hard to do. It's hard for me to overlook. It's easy to see. Hard to overlook. Like, oh, I'll just pretend that one didn't happen. Tough, right? And especially when you have this, you're in this phase, which I kind of see myself in, is this justice phase. We kind of hit that point in the cycles of life. We get to this point where we seek justice. We want a path correction. We want to go down a path that says, this is prudent. This is how we'll get results. So again, you can show me otherwise, but I think we kind of got the market cornered on this as Catholics. And thanks to St. John Paul the 23rd, or St. John the 23rd, excuse me, for kicking my butt. More to come. I'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to BreadBox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. BreadBox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back at Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Pope Francis saying that unless you're out evangelizing, you may as well just get some mothballs. Just go ahead and do that because you're sitting there, you're going to get moth-eaten eventually, so who cares? Why bother? Why are you even not just buying the mothballs? So asking us to get out, Catholic News Agency posted this on my Facebook page. Get out there and do things. Get out there and be a part. Get out there and get connected. Have conversations. Have good exchanges, honest exchanges. Do things for others. Physically do them, whatever they may be, even though they seem to be inconvenienced. And here's the thing I've just discovered. You'll always find those opportunities. It might be today at the street corner, right? When the guy's standing there with a sign and it's your turn, it's there and it's obvious and you got something to give them. It could be that. It could be people will just come along and they'll be in your path. It'll happen. I promise you, you will have those opportunities to be Christ to others. You just will. And we need to do it. We can't sit still. We can't act like things aren't happening, that things aren't going on. We got to be a part of it. So don't get the mothballs. Get out and get going. This couple of disturbing stories. One is this Texas story from this mosque being apparently intentionally set ablaze. Don't know all the details, but the beautiful other side of this is there's almost $1 million raised just in a couple of days to rebuild this place. That's amazing. I don't know what it's going to cost to rebuild, maybe more than $1 million, but it seems like for a 4,000 square foot space, I know it's commercial space, but still, that's a hefty chunk of cash. So good for them. Good for them. And we don't know exactly the details of this specifically, but this mosque has been under attack. There's no doubt in Texas. Same is true for the mosque in Quebec City. It had received other challenges like a pig's head being placed on its doorstep over the past year. And then, of course, now with this mass shooting taking place, which, as I said to begin the show, there's a couple of dynamics here that are really interesting when you think about what's happened to this. Because what we've got is a situation where, first off, it's Quebec, it's Canada, right? We don't even think about mass shootings in Canada. It's not even something that remotely registers. It's not part of that dynamic of a Canadian mindset. And then for this individual to be radicalized, right? I mean, I think that when we think radicalization, we think it has to be Islamic radicalization. No, anyone can be radicalized. Anyone can be. We could be extremely radicalized to the left or to the right of politics to the point that we're going to take extreme measures and do extreme things. Look at the Dylann Roof case. Look what happened in Charleston, South Carolina. Look what happened there. Here was a kid who got radicalized to the point that he is doing what he did and killing people. The same is true of this young man. And by the way, forgive me for saying Roof's name. I said I wasn't going to mention any other, but it slipped out as I was thinking about the case, and I knew I should have just said the guy in Charleston. I tried to make a vow. I tried to say that I am not going to honor them even with mentioning them, and then I broke my own vow, so forgive me for that. But this is what we're dealing with. We think that, and this is, when I say this, it's going to sound like a broad generalization, so please understand what I'm saying. We think that it's a particular religion that is our enemy. That's not our enemy. The challenge, and I wouldn't even call it an enemy, I'd just call it the challenge, this is what we get to look at, is the radicalization, which can take place with anyone when you go down a rabbit hole far enough that you're willing to come out on the other side with this type of attitude. This guy was far right. He had a hatred toward refugees and immigrants and Muslims in particular. And he took this out on these people in prayer. Same is true in Charleston. South Carolina. This is the unfortunate reality that we deal with. We have, I think, already a predisposition for extremism. I don't know. We hear people talk about, they were so nice and normal. And then, I don't know. I think there's generally a predisposition. There's some, or at least maybe a trigger point at some point that says, okay, this is opening that door for that. And then they go down it and they become this other person that is capable of doing things of this nature. And again, if it takes place in Canada, and I'm being a little bit facetious, but this isn't commonplace, but it's happening and it continues to happen. And when it happens, and as it happens, this is what we end up with as results of this nature. So how do we guard against the radicalization? That's the question. Now, the one thing that our Muslim brothers and sisters are doing is in their mosques, they have training to say, how do we watch for this radicalization? They're trying to stem it before it happens. You look at what we do in the Catholic Church when it comes to our training for those who are in ministry to make sure that they know what they're looking for when it comes to things like child predation. That's part of this process, right? That's what can take place when people become aware and realize there's a problem. You can set up very specific systems to say, we're going to do this and we're going to make sure that we pay attention to this. The Catholic Church did that 15 years ago, whenever it was. They knew the challenges and they decided then that they were going to try to stem this and keep it from happening before it happens again. So do we need to do the same thing? I think that's a question. I think it's a fair question. Is there a way that somehow we can go, wait a minute, let's try to prevent this before it happens? And I'm not talking about some sort of sci-fi Minority Report. I'm saying, look at the platforms that are out there. They're out there. Catholic Church is one of them with the Virtus Plan, which I think is now broadened even to other training programs. But they're out there where you begin to get an awareness to say, we can't let this happen again. We cannot let this happen. And these are priests who did egregious things. They didn't kill anyone, but they did egregious things. And we changed the system. We changed the structure of what we do when we're around kids, when we're working in active ministry. We changed everything that we do to protect those who would potentially find themselves as prey. We put those positions in place. Those measures were clearly taken. So I really have to ask, is this the time? Is it now the time, now that we see something of this nature, to maybe begin to look at that? And I know you can say, well, this happened in Canada. I mean, come on. We're America first, right? Who cares? We got to take care of our own. I've heard that so many times. No, we take care of our own by taking care of others. That's what Jesus says. Counterintuitive, countercultural. It's how it works. When we are willing to say, okay, I'm gonna do everything I can for you to win, not even so I can win, but I just know I'll win as a process of that. If I'm working for you, if I'm doing everything I can for you, it's crazy the way it works, but I will be rewarded. I know that I will be rewarded. Grace will smile upon me because of this. Because Scripture is very clear. We will sow what we reap. Scripture is very clear. Love God and love others. Show your love for God the way you love others. So if we stand in solidarity with those who have been personally affected by this tragedy in Quebec, and we begin to look at possible ways to stem this from ever happening, that's the best way we can honor them. Best way we can honor them. Say, how do we keep this from ever happening again? Because you know what? Now it's in a, it is truly in a completely different dynamic. We got to be able to recognize that. We got to be able to see that this kind of stuff generally would never happen in Quebec. Should never happen anywhere. And even if it happened in the U.S. where we're used to this kind of stuff, unfortunately, it's not acceptable behavior ever. What do we do? How do we find a way? How do we say, okay, back to the virtues, let's bring this individual who is obviously off the deep end into some sort of virtuous understanding? Because even those who are off the deep end, even those who are extreme, there's still something good we can call from that. We can look at this and go, okay, at least it's good you're doing this. I love your passion. Wow, man, you're a passionate individual. That's great. Now let's bring that passion over here. Whatever. I'm not saying I have the answers by any means. I have potential solutions if we were to look at what we could do in these situations to prevent them from ever happening again. But the specific answers, I don't know. We got to ask a lot more questions to get the answers that I think that we need to this. Because at this point, all we know is that it's happened again, right? It's happened again. And I don't care if it's a Muslim extremist or a Christian extremist, when someone takes this measure of going that far to murder others that they find a threat because they have been so completely radicalized, we have got to stem radicalization. It's not an us against them. It's not a Muslim-Christian thing. It's not the haves and have-nots. It's nothing of that nature. Those who are becoming radicalized, how do we fix it? That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.